From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Boy, we were right in the middle of some severe thunderstorms and tornado warnings near the Cave here in St. Louis. A second wave is supposed to hit us in about an hour or two. We've got the generators ready, so keep your fingers crossed. Later tonight, mythical creatures. By the way, hope you enjoyed your Labor Day weekend. Man, it's unbelievable that we're in September now, rolling along. You know, in the 1880s, Americans typically worked 12-hour days, 7 days a week. Kids as young as five or six could work in factories. Labor Day is a creation of the labor movement and dedicated to the social and economic achievements of American workers. Now there are about 156 million Americans in the civilian labor force, and this Labor Day is usually celebrated with barbecues, with friends and family, or just taking it easy. But 7 out of 10 Americans say the recent recession's impact will be permanent, and that's up from 5 out of 10 in 2009 when the slump officially ended, they say. Other the key findings of the John Heldrick Center for Workforce Development's latest work trends include, despite sustained job growth, lower levels of employment, most Americans do not think the economy has improved in the last year or that it will in the next year. Just 1 in 6 Americans believes that job opportunities for the next generation will be better than theirs. 5 years ago, 4 in 10 held that view. And roughly 4 in 5 Americans, 80%, have little or no confidence that the federal government will make progress on the nation's most important problems over the next year. They have lost hope. But we need to get America back again. We need to get America rolling. We need to build our manufacturing sector again while keeping this strong service sector growing that has been, of course, prevalent because of the internet. But I've got hope for the future. I really do. Except I will say it's going to be a bumpy, bumpy ride. The only clinical trial data on the experimental Ebola drug called ZMapp shows it's 100% effective in monkey studies, even in later stages of that infection. The researchers publishing their data in Nature said it was very important to understand this is a critical first step. Yet the limited supplies will not help the 20,000 people predicted to be infected during the outbreak in West Africa. And 2 out of 7 people given the drug have later died from this disease. Well, President Obama may not have a strategy for defeating the Islamic State, but the Islamic State has a strategy for the U.S. In fact, that strategy is set out in part in an Al-Qaeda manual recently translated for the benefit of the U.S. military. A guerrilla war proceeds in phases, according to Abdul Aziz Muquin, a practical course for guerrilla war, a strategic and tactical guide to the Mujahideen intent on establishing a pure Islamic system, free from defects and infidel elements, was written after the 9/11 terrorist attacks. Now, the first phase they call is attrition, which is strategic defense, the time for carrying out attacks, spectacular operations. Phase 2 is the time of relative strategic balance, when the jihadists build an army to hold territory. Phase 3 is a time of internal discord and political upheaval for the regime to be very decisive. The terrorists use their conventional army to launch dramatic assaults. Let's check in with one of the experts, author, of course, Licensed to Kill, Hired Guns in the War on Terror, Robert Young Pelton. Robert, what's your take on what we've been hearing over the last couple weeks about terrorist training in Mexico and, you know, situations like this?
Well, first of all, I think you have to understand that ISIS is having a field day with their PR program. I mean, you're seeing a lot of photographs, a lot of very dramatic, violent things being sent over the internet. But in terms of their strategic gains and what they're actually doing, they're just taking advantage of a power vacuum. Now, you know, are they in Mexico? Are they in other countries? No. But could they create cells and could they encourage people to do violent acts, either through lone wolf or through, you know, sort of the guy that comes back from fighting jihad and he wants to blow himself up? Absolutely.
Well, now we're hearing a lot of things lately. I mean, you just said that you don't think they're in Mexico, but you know, I'm hearing that they're training down in Ciudad Juarez, and that they could come across the border. If that's the case, why aren't we doing anything with the Mexican government to stop this?
Well, you know, there's a lot of people of Arab descent in Mexico, and there's a lot of chitter chatter about, you know, are Islamic fundamentalists there? Is Hezbollah operating there? But technically, there's been no sort of hard history of Islamic fundamentalism in Latin America. You know, they've got the tri-border area down in South America, and there's been a few rumors, but I've never found any actual hard evidence of Islamic groups operating in Mexico.
Hearing any chatter, Robert, about what may come?
Well, you know, what's happening now is that the world, whether it be Russia or whether it be ISIS, is taking advantage of America's sort of very timid posture. You know, our sort of post-Afghanistan, post-Iraq view of the world is like, we don't want to get involved again, but we're actually getting involved again. So, you know, you read about U.S. attacks in Somalia, we've got airstrikes in northern Iraq. We are at war, but just on a very different level.
All right, Robert, thanks. Let's talk with you further in depth at a later date. Boy, he really has his finger on the pulse of the planet. Ukrainian forces have suffered a series of setbacks as pro-Russian rebels advance in the east of the country. Officials said nearly 700 soldiers there had been taken prisoner since the rebel offensive began. Vladimir Putin, the Russian president, simply has said that he can take Kiev in 2 weeks if he wants to. Authorities say a lightning strike has killed a boy who was swimming in central Pennsylvania in a creek. Lancaster newspapers report that three boys were swimming in a creek in Fulton Township when a storm moved through Sunday afternoon. And, of course, one of the boys pronounced dead. Sad story there. Wildlife authorities in Florida have caught a man who killed and ate 15 tortoises and planned to slaughter 11 more of the threatened reptiles. Jeez. Russia's biggest bank is offering to deliver cats to the doorsteps of new mortgage clients as part of a promotional campaign. In Russia, it's considered good fortune if a cat enters a new home ahead of the owners. What's going on in the skies these days? Let's check in with our astronomer, Dr. Skies, Stephen Cates. Stephen, what's new up there?
Well, hi, George, and happy happy September, I should say.
Yeah, that's right. Now, it'll be Thanksgiving before you know it.
Yeah, I'm rushing the season here, but happy September. George, there's so many wonderful things to see in our skies this month, and we start off with this brief sky tour. Next Monday night, sky watchers should note the beauty of the harvest moon. And this is something very special, George. We know that we've been talking about supermoons in the past weeks and months, and they're fascinating to watch. But the harvest moon rises actually before the sun sets. So sky watchers looking next Monday, September the 8th, if you locate the exact times of moonrise and sunset, you'll know that the moon will be in your skies a little earlier than normal. And thus the whole lore and antiquity of a harvest moon was that in the days when we were much more agricultural, we of course depended on that light to harvest the moon. It's just simply a beautiful opportunity to see how the sun fully illuminates the moon when all of the objects are in the sky. And George, for planets, there's always something fascinating. Sky watchers looking in the southwest still can see the beautiful conjunction of Mars and Saturn. And here's a note, on the 27th of September, Mars and the brilliant star Antares and Scorpius are very close together. But for observers, George, in Hawaii, on the 27th, they get to see the thin crescent moon cover up and eclipse the planet Saturn, a very rare sight. And for sky watchers into early Tuesday morning, if you look, George, into the northeastern sky just before sunrise, a small but maybe still powerful meteor shower called the Auriga. It could produce anywhere from 6 to maybe 50 meteors per hour. Looking in the northeast, near the brilliant blue star and red star, depending on your vantage point, Capella. And, George, always great updates at drsky.com and our aviation site, photorecon.net.
Super. Stephen, thanks again. Always appreciate your work. You know, we've got a split show for you tonight, this Labor Day night. So in a couple hours, we're going to be talking about some mythical creatures. So get ready for that as we go live to Europe. But in a moment, William Henry, back from Egypt with us. William, of course, the investigative mythologist, and he will be telling us about some incredible things. So stand by on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, and as I mentioned, we're in the eye of the storm here in St. Louis, here in the Cave. The first wave has already blown past us, but there will be another one in an hour or two, so brace yourself. Why should I tell you to brace yourself? You're not here, but I will. Here's William Henry, investigative mythologist, author of a number of books, and of course, just taped year number 7, as I did for the History Channel's Ancient Aliens, where William will play a bigger role this year. Exciting stuff, William. Welcome back to Coast.
Hi, George. It's so great to talk with you.
So they're concentrating. I think year 7 is going to concentrate more on the gods instead of aliens, aren't they?
Yeah, there's a shift in the show. They've found a real sweet spot here of kind of moving away from the idea that the ancient aliens are traveling the universe in flying Toyotas or tricked-out Benzes, you know, the hardware spaceship kind of approach, and looking more at an esoteric or even a mystical approach to these ancient visitors. And that's what gets me excited, is to say, well, wait a minute, now we can really get into some of the more advanced beings that we know have been coming and going, and also start to kind of look at ourselves and our participation with these visitors, because it was them who they who originally left some extraordinary mystical teachings for us, and this is the new sweet spot for ancient aliens.
William, you've been all over the map. You've been in Egypt a number of times. I remember we were talking to you when you were on a bus when they were having that Arab Spring. You just came back from England at a special conference. Tell me about that.
I had the good fortune to present at the Conference for Consciousness and Human Evolution. My good friends Greg Braden and Dr. Lynn McTaggart, Dr. Amit Goswami, and Peter Garyev were also presenters. About 1,000 people showed up for this amazing
wow.
event in London. My talk was about the unbound human. I'm really concerned about how our privacy, how our rights are evaporating right before our very eyes, and I was starting to look at some different solutions that anybody can start to enact now to counteract that.
Your big presentation was that on the unbound soul. What is an unbound soul?
Well, it's a limitless being. It's a cosmic being. It's a human being who transcends the physical limitations of our world, be it our body or our governments or society, and instead begins to embrace the true capacity that's within all of us. Ultimately, it refers to what the Tibetans call the rainbow body of light as the future of humanity. They, in this tradition, they see all of us as in the process of morphing. We're going from caterpillars to butterflies, and if we continue to identify with our caterpillar or pupil self, we're going to have some trouble in these days ahead. But if we begin to rather to connect with our next level of our evolution, our spiritual, mental, physical, and emotional evolution, our butterfly self, we're going to have a much easier time.
Do you think that we are going through such a change on this planet, and it seems to me that it's between the power brokers and us? Are you sensing that?
Oh, absolutely. It's time. This is the age of individual empowerment. There has never been a time in history like this very moment where an individual has the power to literally to bring down a government. A group of hackers can wipe out the U.S. electrical power grid. They can severely damage the U.S. military. There's never been a time in history where people have access to information like we have, connectivity, and also just simply imagination to be able to imagine a human being who is fully functioning. And that is the big challenge to the state right now. This is why we're seeing the control mechanisms that are coming into place here, because they know that we're talking about a time of unlimited power for the individual.
It seems to be happening faster and faster and faster, William.
Yeah, the acceleration. I remember back in the 80s when we first started talking about this acceleration and this transformation, and we got into the 90s and things really started to speed up. Now everything is condensing, and it's almost like it's like we live a decade every year. And next year, perhaps, it's going to be like we're going to be living 2 decades every 3 days or so. It's absolutely incredible, and this is a in part goes back to what the Mayans said all along was going to be happening during this window of time.
Are we in the middle of prophecy right now, in your opinion?
Yes, absolutely. We are living it. We are the forces are lining up. Judeo-Christian civilization, Islamic civilization is predicated on the idea that there was a beginning with Adam and Eve. There will be an end with the second coming of a Christ Messiah or Mahdi. There's all kinds of signs that major government figures from Iran to Iraq throughout ISIS and other organizations are looking to the return of the Islamic Messiah anytime now. We are seeing evidence that the long prophesied Christian New Jerusalem and the emergence of the new human is walking the streets right now. We call them cyborgs. Transhumanism is fulfilling the prophecy of the next human or the new human being, a being of light who will inhabit a new kingdom of heaven on earth.
You've got a new workout called, of course, The Watchers, Lost Secrets of Resurrection. I want to talk with you about that, William, when we come back after the break. But back to this thought of the haves and the have-nots and this control, this mechanism that they seem to be pushing faster and faster. Are they panicking, William, those power brokers?
I don't think they're panicking. I think they feel like they've got everything, from their point of view, under control. They've managed to just really immerse billions of people in destructive emotions of fear, anger, jealousy, competitiveness, dog-eat-dog mentality. That's what the predator wants. That's exactly where they want us, because now they can suck our energy dry. And that ultimately is their objective. And what we have to figure out is, how do we keep that dog? How do we keep that wolf outside the door? How do we keep that predator away from impacting our personal energy field and thereby then be able to influence the global energy field that will eradicate this cancer from humanity?
Can we keep those predators away?
We absolutely can. And this is the whole point of the end time battles of Armageddon that we've heard so much about. It's not so much an apocalypse, that's a misused term. Rather, it's an awakening to our true potential, and it's time for us to decide which side are we on, the side of anger and hate or the side of love and light.
William, what's new with you beyond what we're going to talk about in just a moment, the Watchers?
I've just been doing a lot of traveling, George. Love being in England. I'm very much looking forward to my upcoming tour of France and Egypt. Still got a couple of places.
Oh, you're going to Rennes-le-Château again, aren't you?
Yeah, can't wait. On the Trail of the Grail, the Cathars, and looking for these incredible mysteries in southern France, one of my favorite places.
Wouldn't that be great if you could find the Ark of the Covenant or the Holy Grail?
Absolutely. I mean, that's the ultimate objective, and as well, I'm sure we'll get into, revealing the secrets of the Ark of the Covenant is the antidote to ISIS and these other crazed kind of fundamentalists out there. When we reveal this, the true secrets of this ancient relic, it will change everything.
Do you think it's in someone's house, some billionaire, or is it in that church in Ethiopia? Where the heck is the Ark of the Covenant?
Well, for most of it's where we would least suspect it's hidden. It's in us. It's a consciousness.
Really? Explain.
It begins with a consciousness. Yeah, we have to remember, and here's the key. When Bezalel, the Israelite craftsman, master craftsman, when he made the Ark of the Covenant for Moses, he was operating from a pattern, a blueprint that was given directly by God. And with that pattern, God gave this craftsman all the wisdom of the universe. Now, why does God need to give a master craftsman all the wisdom of the universe to build a simple Indiana Jones-like golden box? The answer is he wouldn't. The reason and the explanation is that the Ark of the Covenant isn't an Indiana Jones golden box. It's first and foremost a consciousness that we develop within ourselves. And when we begin to tap into this consciousness, it changes us. It transforms us from ordinary men or humans into the next level human. Call it an angelic type of being. Call it an ascended being. There are different terms, a glorified human. But that's the real quest for the Ark of the Covenant and the Grail, is to tap into this universal wisdom that enabled Bezalel to craft the Ark.
When we come back in a moment here on Coast to Coast AM, we'll be talking with William Henry about his latest work, The Watchers. So get ready for that. William's website, linked up at coasttocoastam.com, williamhenry.net. I'm George Norrie as we are wrapping up our Labor Day weekend, and I'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, welcome back to Coast, our Labor Day night program for you. And you know the deal. It's a holiday. We're live here for you, as we will be on Thanksgiving and on Christmas and on New Year's Day. And you name it, we'll be here for you. And welcome back to Coast. William Henry with us. We'll take calls with William next hour. William, your latest work, The Watchers, Lost Secrets of Resurrection. Let's dive right into this. Who are, in your opinion, the Watchers?
The Watchers are a group of angels who at one time dwelled at the throne of God, a heavenly location they refer to as Sion. They're described as fallen angels. They're called that because they left their, what's referred to in the Bible as their divine or perfect state. They're actually Christ-like beings in the heavenly realm. And then they took on physicality. They fell from this divine place into taking on human form and began to influence humankind. Some people say that they're a negative influence. Others say, well, wait a minute, they're actually bringing some very powerful teachings for humanity. And that's what excited me about getting into the story of the Watchers, is that they've largely, I think, been misunderstood. They've been the subject of gross oversimplification by typically kind of evangelical types. Then you've got the scholarly types over here, George, that are deeply interested in the Watchers. I mean, academia, the ivory tower types are all over studying the Watchers and how they crossed over this boundary between heaven and earth and opened literally portals and gateways. And so I've been kind of moving into that direction, looking at the Watchers as these super advanced beings who crossed over this supposedly forbidden boundary and have come to teach humanity how we too can cross over that boundary.
William, the angels, the Watchers, generally, they're all pretty good. But are there any evil ones in the mix?
Well, there's several. You've got figures like Azazel and others who are blamed for the corruption of humanity. They corrupted humanity by giving us advanced knowledge. Some Jewish esoteric researchers believe that this knowledge had to do with alchemy and in human transformation. So from that perspective, they've gotten a really bad rap. And what happens, George, what I've noticed in at least a lot of the popular literature about the Watchers, is that they're labeled as demonic or sinful beings or things such as this, these really kind of dark labels. And they prevent people from actually going deeper into their story to say, well, wait a minute, what were they actually teaching? And one of the reasons why the Watchers have been so misunderstood is because the information, especially the Dead Sea Scrolls, were lost until only, 70 years ago. So we're just now beginning to get access to these texts that describe the Watchers in detail and also allude to their teachings and even tell us directly that Jesus possess the teachings of the Watchers, the lost tablets of the Watchers that the people have been seeking for millennia. So in fact, the Watchers' teaching is at the very core of Judaism, Christianity, and also Islam.
William, are the Watchers also the same as the fallen ones?
Yes. They are referred to as the fallen, as I mentioned, because they no longer dwell in their celestial location. They fell to earth. And one of the things I collected in my book, The Watchers, was this amazing art, especially beginning since the Renaissance. There's been some amazing depictions of the so-called fall of the Watchers, which is really more of a transformation of a shining, iridescent, lightning-like rainbow being. This is how the Watchers are described in their heavenly location. They're rainbow-like, iridescent, move like lightning, and are in every way, shape, and form illuminated or shining beings. This is why they're called the shining ones. Then they take on physical bodies. So they have stepped down their frequency, if you will, when they enter into a human body and operate in their human form. But what the Watchers possess that humans have forgotten to do or know how to do is how to drop our human skin, our human coat, and readopt the shining coat, as it's referred to, or glory body, light body, rainbow body, of the Watchers, which is in fact our original status. It's like we've fallen asleep to who we really are, and the Watchers came to wake us up. And some of us are waking up, others are saying, oh no, I'm still going to go back, I'm still sleeping. So that's essentially the predicament, to kind of simplify it.
And didn't the Watchers, weren't they the ones that mingled with the daughters of men and they bore the offspring called the Nephilim?
The Nephilim, the men of renown. And this is where takes us right straight to the heart of the controversy and the real intrigue about the Watchers. Because you were talking about alien beings, extraterrestrial beings, coming from God's throne, maybe even sent by God himself, to come into human civilization and alter it, especially about teaching humans how to cross over the forbidden boundary between earth and heaven. Because, as the Bible says, flesh and blood cannot inherit the kingdom of heaven. But the Watcher said, well, we've got an idea about that, about how humans can change their flesh and blood into light. And so they enter human civilization, taking on human form, and intermarry with humans and create this offspring race, the Nephilim, who are often, and I believe, mischaracterized as these giant beings. When you read the ancient stories, the source text describing the offspring, the Nephilim, as giants, they're not described, I mean, they describe some of them as being miles high. So obviously we're talking about an allegory here. We're talking about humans who possess superhuman or giant capabilities, just like the Watchers. Now here's the key. These superhuman capabilities that the Nephilim possessed are symbolized by a coat or a cloak of light that is transmittable, that's passed along. Adam possessed it in the Garden of Eden. Enoch possessed it. Elijah possessed it. Jesus possessed it. Other figures throughout history have attempted to acquire this cloak or garment of light that transforms an ordinary or mortal human into a super being, into a watcher-type angel, simply by putting on this shining garment. And that's what the whole story of the Watchers, in my view, is all about.
Something on this happened, William, happened a long time ago. I mean, there's no doubt, whether you believe in biblical translation or science, something dramatic happened a long time ago. These stories that we hear of the Watchers, of archangels, you just can't make that stuff up.
No, these beings are real, George. I'm absolutely convinced they're real. And this event that we're talking about is still happening. It's not a past event. We're living it. We are the living offspring of these beings. They brought technology to Earth in Egypt. The Watcher Angels, or the leader of the Watcher Angels, is called Ptah. He is the one who built, according to some, the pyramids in Egypt, brought the technology for that. He is also the one who introduced the secrets of immortality to humanity, and he fashioned the bodies of men. We're talking about a celestial being coming to Earth and tweaking human DNA. Why? To make a slave race? That argument is not holding as much water as it used to. Instead, we're finding that these are beings who are bringing super advanced knowledge about human ascension, human transformation into angels. And when you start talking about human transformation into angels, we're not talking about cuddly Hallmark card stuff here. We're talking about humans becoming avatars or adepts. We're talking about humans becoming Christ-like beings. And that steps on the toes of a lot of people. For one reason, you can't have a planet full of Christ-like beings running around. They're unmanageable and they don't pay taxes. So the first thing you got to do is you got to demonize the people that are bringing that kind of a teaching. And this is one reason why the Watchers have been demonized, because their teaching poses such a threat to the power structure of religion and also the political world that you have to say that these guys are evil, demonic, blah, 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 to keep the sheeple away from really attaining their true empowerment.
William, 1 Enoch and then the Book of Jubilees all have similar accounts about the Watchers and how they fell. What I find amazing is that whether it's the Bible, portions of 1 Enoch, Jubilees, they all seem to say the same thing, that something dramatic happened and they fell.
Yeah, two schools. One, these stories were written by the Essenes around 160 B.C., there was a major conflagration in Jerusalem at the time, focused on the Temple of Solomon. Some people believe that the Watcher Angels are simply the fallen priests of the temple. And what ended up happening is that you had a couple of groups that left Jerusalem. Their temple had been desecrated. And a group of them went to Qumran on the Dead Sea. Another group went to Egypt, to Heliopolis or Leontopolis. In both places, they started writing about this new superhero whose name was Enoch, who was illuminated or initiated by these angels called the Watchers. And Enoch is taken into heaven. He's shown the secret of human transformation, especially via an oil that the Archangel Michael, who is a Watcher, who rubbed this oil on Enoch's body, dissolved it into rainbow-colored light so that he was exactly the same as the Watcher angels, and then initiated Enoch in all this powerful knowledge. So this is the core of the Essene movement, and what the Essenes were teaching, along with the secrets of Enoch, was that, hey, guys, we don't necessarily need the temple anymore. We've got a new technology. We can transform our bodies into the temple, into a vessel that is capable of holding this higher energy, and in holding this higher, call it a Christ-like energy, a divine energy, an angelic energy, we can turn ourselves into angels. Then we can commune with these Watcher angels. And George, I have to tell you, I am blown away by what is going on in the ivory towers around the world. They have gone into the Dead Sea Scrolls, the text from Qumran and the text of the Essenes, and they are revealing the explicit language that the Essenes were using, saying, one, our communities are stargates, they're portals that bring in these angelic beings, the Watchers, and they are teaching us to become angels or Watcher-type beings ourselves. And the language is absolutely direct. It hasn't reached the alternative or even the popular literature yet. I'm hoping to change that with a book I'm working on right now, to take this information out of the ivory tower and put it into the public consciousness, because it's absolutely critical that we recognize that right now we have this opportunity that we've been waiting for at least a couple of thousand years, to really transform humanity and to put it back on a divine timeline.
Are the Watchers still here?
Yeah, yes, absolutely. The Watchers, I don't think they've ever left. The texts about them were lost, but the Watchers themselves, I believe that they're here. Signs are, one, we're talking about it now. I mean, you can't hardly look around in this area right now without finding somebody talking about the Watchers. But also, the key thing is to focus on the technology. Remember, the Watchers introduced technology to humanity, and humanity is trying to become like the Watchers. And what this ultimately means is that we have to learn how to put on this shining coat, this garment of glory, this rainbow body of light, this Christ body. These are all different terms for the same thing, which is ultimately putting on this iridescent, shining cloak of skin. Well, this is exactly what the digitati in Silicon Valley and elsewhere are working on right now. They are merging four technologies that are aimed at the human skin that will literally create a new cloak or garment of skin for humanity. And I look at that and I say, gosh, these the digitati are trying to become like the Watchers, whether they realize it or not.
This is dramatic, William. It really is. And it sounds like, if I'm interpreting you correctly, that you go against the grain of some of the books that have written about the Watchers. Am I correct?
Yes, I do, because they put you in an endless loop. A lot of the popular material, and there's nothing wrong with it, but you find that many of the popular authors about the Watchers reference one another, and they never really get beyond the kind of the simplified take on the Watchers. And when I saw that, I then jumped over to the academic side, and I realized, okay, the academics have been writing about this very deeply. They talk explicitly about how the heavens open when the Watchers appear, how the Watchers are luminous beings of light, how they possess this transmittable teaching symbolized by a cloak or a garment, and they want to share it with humanity. And they want humankind to jump over the fence. The Watchers feel like humanity has been penned down by some kind of a force. We're down on the farm. And they came here in part to help us to get off the plantation. To get off the fear plantation, this fear farm, this prison planet that we dwell on. And that is an equally viable perspective about the Watchers to what you will see in the evangelical take, which is, in my opinion, again, is valid, but it's simple. It's way oversimplified. And it prevents us ultimately from accessing this teaching to better ourselves, to transform our lives. And that's what I'm trying to get at, because, George, again, I can't hardly contain my excitement when I find academic scholarly book after academic book that tells us explicitly how humans can transform into angels. I mean, think about that. Think
it is true.
We start spending masses of time and masses of people actually actively triggering this transformation. It would utterly transform our world into a place of light and love virtually overnight.
I hope you're right, William. If you're wrong, what does that mean?
Well, if I'm wrong, we get more of the same of what we've had. Disempowered humanity, people living in fear, anger, jealousy, and confusion. And this is what we're trying to combat right now. We're trying to vanquish this once and for all. And ultimately, it's about uniting people, because the Watchers, they don't belong to Judaism, they don't belong to Christianity, and they don't belong to Islam, although all the big three religions talk about the Watchers. But all of them attempt to conceal, in part, their true secrets and the true potential of humanity. I can't find any Christian churches right now anywhere in the world that are teaching Christianity.
And no.
It's because they don't have access or haven't accessed this knowledge that we're talking about. It simply hasn't been available for the first 1947 years of Christianity. It just wasn't there. And so what we need to do is to really take a serious look at this, listen to the academics, weigh what the evangelical types are saying, and blend the two, and then I think we're really going to be in business.
How does this equate with the hatred of some of these crazed jihadists and fundamentalists?
Oh, my gosh, I can't even, in part, fathom that kind of mindset. I mean, it's just a totally different species, almost, that we're dealing with in terms of this kind of fundamentalism. But yet, you know, we see it in all the religions. And that's the thing, is that while most of these religions teach moderation, it seems that it's the extremists of Judaism, Christianity, and Islam that are actually getting all the attention. And in my view, part of what has to happen is that there has to be a respect that is shown by all to all the world's religions. I mean, it's so easy to throw rocks at Islam, or for Islam to throw rocks at Judaism or Christianity, but the rock throwing, that has to cease. We have to put down the rocks. That's the very first step. And then we begin to realize that we're all in the same boat here together, and we begin to navigate the ship into a different direction.
William, we're going to come back and take an hour of phone calls with you about your fascinating work. Also, I understand you're starting a new mystery school. We'll talk about that when we come back on Coast to Coast AM.